May it please the court, Mr. John Wheatley will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 6 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'd like to start off with a short summary of the facts just to set the stage for our argument. On the morning of June 23, 1995, Mr. Robert Black went to Smith Travel Agency to procure flight accommodations on Delta Airlines from DFW Airport to Las Vegas. That flight would be leaving some 5 hours after he made his contact with Smith Travel. The travel was going to be for he and his wife. And he was told by Smith Travel that the tickets they were giving him were for first class for both he and his wife, but they would not be sitting together in first class. The tickets that were assigned, however, only showed a seat assignment for Mr. Black. It did not show a seat assignment for Mrs. Black. It merely stated okay in that section. Ultimately, Delta informed Mr. Black at the gate that Mrs. Black was not in, did not have a confirmed reservation on first class, but she was in coach, and that first class was sold out, and they could not put her there. They offered to give Mr. Black a refund of the upcharge that he had paid between coach and first class, that being $60, plus two free domestic travel vouchers. They're $2,000 tickets because they were purchased that day. They were purchased the... Yes, it was only $120 total for the upcharge. And the reason for that was he was a frequent flyer and had the advantage of upgrading to first class where available for just the $60 upcharge. So they offered him the $60 plus two free tickets to fly anywhere, but he declined that. And then they tried to make some other accommodations for him, none of which ultimately were acceptable to him. And what he did is he took his wife from DFW, drove to Love Field, chartered a private jet and made his own first class accommodations by flying the private jet to Las Vegas and housing the jet's crew there for the 2 days he was there to come back. The charges for that, associated with that, were in excess of $13,000. Mr. Black sued Delta and Delta's gate agent, Al Perez, in State District Court in Dallas County, along with... Yes, they also sued the travel agent, Smith Travel. And the causes of action alleged against Delta and Perez were intentional and negligent misrepresentation, and against Delta alone was a breach of contract. The trial court granted a summary judgment on behalf of Delta and Perez on, among other grounds, the grounds that the claims were preempted by the Airline Deregulation Act, after the ADA. The reason why this case is so old is that there was no severance of that summary judgment, and the case went on with Smith Travel. And Smith Travel ultimately got a motion for summary judgment granted, and both went up to appeal. It was reassigned to the Waco Court of Appeals. And the Waco Court of Appeals reversed the judgment of the trial court, holding that none of Mr. Black's claims against Delta or Perez were barred by preemption. The ADA preempts all of Mr. Black's claims in this case, however, and the Court of Appeals' opinion is an error. 49 U.S.C. section 41713B provides that a state may not enact or enforce a law, regulation, or other provision having the force and effect of law related to a price, route, or service of an air carrier. Mr. Black's causes of action relate to Delta's ticketing and boarding procedures, and as such, they relate to a service rendered by an airline. This fact has been recognized by a number of cases that we've cited in our briefing, including Hodges and Lynn Lee Travel, Fifth Circuit case.
So
How is this different? That the putting the bag is, I think, in Kiefer, it was decided that was a service. What we do is, I think the question of whether it's a service or not is really the easy question in this case. Where the Court of Appeals stumbled, it really involves that the second prong of preemption as to whether where the ADA prohibits enacting or enforcing a law or regulation or other provision having the force or effect of law. And that gets us to American Airlines versus Woolen, where the United States Supreme Court held that in that particular case, the bringing of a breach, a state law-based breach of contract cause of action did not amount to such a law, regulation, or other provision having the force and effect of law. It's not whether it relates to the price, route, or service, but whether there's some sort of state regulation of that. Woolen's involved a suit brought by members of American Airlines Frequent Flyer Program against American Airlines, claiming deceptive trade, but also a breach of contract in that American was trying to modify its program unilaterally and retroactively. American Airlines had argued that that claim was preempted by the ADA, and the U.S. Supreme Court disagreed. The court reasoned that the state contract claims do not constitute state-imposed regulations where the plaintiff seeks redress for violation of contract terms set by the parties themselves. The U.S. Supreme Court made it expressly clear, however, that the ADA confines courts in breach of contracts actions to the parties' bargain with no enlargement or enhancement based on state laws or policies external to the agreement. And the Austin Court of Appeals has recognized this as well in Boone Insurance Agency versus American Airlines, in which it held that a class action suit seeking to invalidate a reissue fee as an impermissible penalty under Texas contract law was preempted by the ADA because it went beyond the strict contract. That's correct.
But why isn't this just one of these added privileges that an airline sometimes by contract gives to its customers? It doesn't really have to do with regulation, the regulations that we're talking about in 49 U.S.C. 41.713, because there's no question that there are seats on there available for these people. Their argument is we have a contract with you, we have a right to first class seats, and then this is really a state law matter that is unaffected by the
Well, what they're saying is that the contract with us is really a contract of carriage. That's the primary thing. What we get into, the problem that we have here is that we get into federal regulations that do involve this type of situation. And that's where I think the...
Are there other cases where, similar cases where there's not really a question about overlooking the flights and what rights and remedies the passengers have, but... rather sort of a relocation, you know, first class.
Not been able to find a single case that is on all fours with ours of where...
Not a single way.
Well, there is a regulation that's about being downgraded in service, in class. And that is 14 CFR 250.6C. And what it does is the Section 250 regs set up a compensation scheme for bumping of passengers. And in that, there are exceptions written in, and this is one of the exceptions. What this regulation says is that where a passenger is booked on one class of service, but is still offered accommodations on another class of service within the airplane, they are not entitled to get into this scheme of compensation, that they have not been bumped, essentially. And what they're entitled to is they're entitled to, if they're going down, they're entitled to a refund with respect to the difference between the classes. And in that case, that was $60. And that's what was offered and refused. And what happens is we got the regulations. We've got the plaintiff that comes in and argues very strenuously that the regulations allow him to reject the compensation, the denial of boarding compensation. He can reject that and bring a suit in state court. The flaw in that argument is that he is not entitled to the denied boarding compensation, and therefore he's not in the position to reject that and bring suit. The regulations do provide that if you're entitled to the denied boarding compensation, then you can reject that. You're being bumped, you can reject that and bring suit for your actual damages. Because the denied boarding compensation doesn't require actual proof of actual damages. You just automatically get it. 250.6C says a passenger in the position of Mrs. Black is not denied boarding for so long as she's given accommodations and that refund. And the distinction that's made is really one that's rationally made by, it was the CAB, the Civil Aeronautics Board, is now the Department of Transportation, where a person has been bumped off of a flight, it is reasonable, it's reasonably foreseeable to see that that person could incur damages beyond what has been set up in the compensation scheme, because they've missed the flight, they might have had an important meeting, they might have to make certain emergency accommodations to get there, and it is foreseeable that that type of person would have damages that go beyond that provided by the scheme, and so the regulation allows that person to reject the offered compensation and to sue. But in this situation, where someone is not denied boarding, but is simply moved from first class to coach, and here done in a situation of where the flight is within 5 hours of being booked, it's not.
If it's your position in ranks,
Mr. Black concedes in his briefing that the contract of carriage incorporates the regulations and that it becomes part of the contract of carriage. And what we're saying is that... that in order to... for the court to find, to award him the damages that he's seeking and to find a breach of contract, the court would have to go beyond the terms of the agreement as bargained for between the parties and impose some other responsibility here and to go beyond that regulation. And what we're saying is that the regulation itself imposes, basically Mr. Black agreed when he got the contract carriage that he could be downgraded and what he would get would be getting the $60 back.
You're trying to fit this under extrinsic rather than the clauses.
That's correct.
May it please the court, Ms. Dorothy J. Hardy will present argument for the respondent.
Please the court. Briefly, what I'd like to point out is in the petitioners have started off their argument by claiming that you need to go into some sort of definition of service under the ADA. I submit that's completely irrelevant to the disposition of this case. Because for the first reason that Wolins didn't need to address that issue of services, neither did this court in Kiefer. What both courts did was look at the statutory language of whether or not something amounted to an enactment or enforcement of state law. What I would submit, Your Honor, is that, first of all, that issue, we don't need to address it, but if you did address it, I would argue that you need to look at the Ninth Circuit's definition of service in Charis versus TWA, where
the...
Well, I'll submit it has to be, it will be. I mean, even if it is in a tangential sort of manner, if you want to look at that, at the definition of service broadly, I would submit that you should look at it narrowly, meaning that you would do a definition of service to mean whether or not something affected the point-to-point transportation of airline passengers to particular markets at various times, which is the Ninth Circuit definition.
I'm just trying to get to my argument that you need to address.
I don't think you need to address that at all. Because I just think it's unnecessary to the disposition of this case.
If you say that it's not, then you know that the phrase that's what it applies.
That's correct.
So, you have to say it is.
Well, if you want to say it is, that's fine, but if you do say it is...
I'm not trying to get into what your position is.
My position is that it's...
If you want to say it is, and you say it is,
I think it's...
You have to say why.
Yes, Your Honor.
If you say it is, well, then that, you say, what do you do?
I would say it's not because of the Ninth Circuit definition, but if you did find, even if it was a service, then we go to the next prong of the test, which is whether or not there's an enactment of state law under the second prong of the Rollins test. Now, the petitioners have argued that the presence of some federal regulations seem to make a preemption of our claims necessary. I submit that that's, again, a red herring, for the reason being that these contracts are in actuality a hybrid of state and federal law. The parties have contracted around both state and federal law based on the contract of carriage as it presently stands. Yes, it
is.
Yes, it would incorporate all of them, and I would point the court both to page 230 of the Wolins opinion, where the court said that the federal regulations and the Federal Administration Act itself presupposes the validity of contracts and allows the airlines to incorporate the federal regulations and incorporate those into the contract of carriage.
Sorry,
to the extent... No, we don't, Your Honor. Here, the reason being, number one, first of all, if you look at section 14 CFR 253.4A, it requires, it says, in addition to other remedies at law, an air carrier may not claim the benefit as against the passenger of, and the passenger shall not be bound by any contract term incorporated by reference if notice of that term has not been provided to that passenger in accordance with this part. They have produced no summary judgment evidence that they complied with that regulation. If they want one regulation, they have to take them all.
Speaking of taking them all, how does 250.9 come into play here? You're familiar with 250.9?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Okay. 14 CFR 250.9 allows a passenger to reject the compensation offered by an airline and actually bring a suit for damages or any other remedies at law.
So it only
no, it does not. The reason why it's not is that, first of all, the particular regulation does not say only if you are bumped and only if you are eligible for denied boarding a compensation. It actually says if you are denied boarding, you are probably entitled to compensation. And then it also requires the airline to give you these notices, not just to a passenger that's denied boarding, but to any passenger. So in my opinion, that it does not just specifically, there's no if, and, or but. More importantly, I would point... Yes, that is correct. That's correct. I would also, in my research, in preparation for oral argument, I did locate a case that I think is important to the court, which is Nader versus Allegheny Airlines, 426 U.S. 290 at 307 footnote 18. And the reason why I raise that, even though it is a pre-ADA case, it does address the exact denied boarding compensation regulation. And there the U.S. Supreme Court said that the Civil Aeronautics Board specifically rejected the carrier's proposal that the denied boarding compensation be made an exclusive remedy. It says, we shall condition our approval of the agreement to make clear that the prescribed penalty, which is the denied boarding compensation, is a minimum obligation of the carrier, which only if accepted by the passenger would terminate the carrier's obligation. What they are arguing is...
This seems to be a
question. Yes, it is.
So, and you said this, you said what's up for you?
I think, yes, I think our breach of contract claim definitely survives under Wolin because it allows routine breach of contract claims to be decided by state courts. The issue then becomes whether or not the fraud / intentional misrepresentation and the negligent misrepresentation claims are also preempted under the statute. Now, the briefing doesn't really address it, at least the petitioner's brief doesn't really address that issue. They just make the assumption, well, if the breach of contract is, all the other ones therefore follow. This court looked both at, looked under Morales and under Wolins when they decided the Kiefer case to determine whether or not ordinary negligence claims are preempted under the ADA. And what this court ruled was that, taking an analysis of Wolin and looking at the Wolins case, that yes, the Supreme Court allows state courts to adjudicate contract claims because there's not so much of an intrusive regulation on the airlines and the airline industry. And what the court did, although it said that there were some reservations over allowing ordinary negligence claims to proceed, it did allow negligence claims to go ahead and go forward and not be preempted. And this court, what the court looked at was said, look, the DOT doesn't have a regulatory facility or the ability to go ahead and adjudicate negligence claims any more than it does the ability to adjudicate contract claims.
With the states started deciding that if these large airlines or passengers can use the kind of interpretation, that would certainly affect the rate structure there.
Yeah, and this court found that exact same point in the Kiefer case, but still allowed negligence claims to proceed anyway. What this court found was that there was little risk of a diverse, non-uniform, or confusing adjudication of tort claims, in addition to, in similarity to the argument that the Wolins court found on the breach of contract.
Now, that's pretty much bad. Whatever states you're in. But states might have a different view about whether somebody who gets bumped should be up to the damages or the community damages, whether that's a consumer violation or a statute violation. That seems to be very much in fact the price route and service that the airlines.
Well, I would say no, because there's little risk of what the court's concern is, because the state contract law is a very non-diverse, and it's not confusing, and it's very fairly uniform throughout the United States. And I would submit to this court that the same thing applies to both the fraud and the negligent misrepresentation claims. Because those, it's similarly like a negligence claim, you have duty, breach of duty, and causation and damages. I mean, the elements are pretty similar throughout the...
Let me ask you a question on this. If you agree that this claim is preempted, and you overbooked, this is an overbooking, is it preempted or not?
I don't see how it could be preempted.
And the statute says simply you would reject whatever compensation offer you can sue for.
That's correct.
How, if Weaver makes the argument that if it's not a, if there's actually a seat that will get you where you're going, then it's not an overbooked situation because you can still get it.
Yeah.
And so why wouldn't, if you were allowed to have a claim when the claim is not over, just because you didn't like your seat, I don't want to sit in the aisle, or I don't want to sit in the exit row, or I don't want to sit up behind the bulkhead, that might be some some concerns that have affected the rates of transportation, because now the plane can be sued just because of a particular place you're sued in, as opposed to whether or not you get to go at all.
First of all, Your Honor, I would point out that Mr. Weaver is incorrect by saying that just because you move from a particular class, you're a class of the airplane, that there is no overbooking. I would point the court to 32 Federal Register 460, 1967, footnote 3, where the agency says, quote, strictly speaking, an oversale also occurs when a passenger is not accommodated in the class of service for which he holds a confirmed reserve space, but is seated in a lower class of service, downgraded, or a higher class, upgraded. However, this type of oversale presents a far less severe problem. It's a proposed notice of proposed rulemaking. No, I don't know, but what it does, it does elucidate to the court exactly what an oversale is. I would submit that that's not the case, because this notice of proposed rulemaking was for these specific regulations.
But I'm sure the question is that the 250.16, which sets up a compensatory scheme when you're downgraded, that appears to be inconsistent with the proposal that you're saying, where they say that's an overbooking.
I don't see that is a problem, because that particular reg does seem to address that problem as well. That's correct. They have to provide the notice in accordance with the terms of that section.
Well, there's a notice that has to come at every time.
That's correct.
And then there's a separate notice?
There's
one. Can you read it for
us? Sure. I mean, 253.4, it's the entire A, or just the... Okay. It says in addition... Okay, in addition... In addition to other remedies at law, an air carrier may not claim the benefit as against the passenger of, and the passenger shall not be bound by, any contract term incorporated by reference if notice of the term has not been provided to that passenger in accordance with this part. And then if you look at 253.5, it tells you how the notice of incorporated terms is supposed to work. And it says that each carrier, with exceptions that don't apply to this case, each air carrier shall include on or with a ticket or other written instrument given to a passenger that embodies the contract of carriage and incorporates by reference in that contract a conspicuous notice that any terms incorporated by reference are part of the contract. Passengers may inspect the full text of each term incorporated by reference at the carrier's airport or city ticket offices, and passengers have the right upon request at any location where the carrier's tickets are sold within the United States to receive free of charge by mail or other delivery service the full text of each such incorporated term. And then there's other, that's A, and then there's other provisions on under subsection B. Yes, that is in the book. No.
Did Mr. Black and his wife make it to the Tom Jones concert?
No, they did not. They missed it. Any other questions?
Council references the CFR 250.9. I'd like to point out that really only kicks in where a passenger has been denied boarding, where you have to give that the passenger the notice of their rights. And one of the rights they can they have is they can decline the compensation and go to court. If they accept the compensation, then they waive that right to go to court. Right. What we're saying is that that whole scheme of where the regs allow a suit to be brought in state court doesn't apply to our situation. Right. Right. 250.6C. Well, Black has conceded in their briefing that the regs are incorporated in the carriage, the contract of carriage, and they also cite the U.S. Supreme Court of American Airlines versus Woolens as saying it becomes part of that agreement.
So are you saying that they can sue for breach of that contract? What your position is, that's not preempted by part of the breach?
Well, we're saying that their suit is preempted because they're suing for something beyond what they were entitled to under the contract. They would be entitled to sue, I think, for breach of contract if they were not, they would be entitled to sue for the refund of their $60. Or in a lot of cases, the first class is a lot higher. And if that was not tendered to them or ever given to them, then I would think they would be able to get that because the regulation says that they're entitled to have that. But what we're saying is that under American Airlines versus Woolens, the court's confined to the bargain itself, and that bargain includes, in this case, the regulation. And where they try and go.
So they can sue for that, they can't sue for anything else, including the bargain, tendering the service. That's preempted.
The fraud, the negligent misrepresentation, any claims for mental anguish, I believe, under Kiefer would probably be.
You say if we read Woolens,
I think so. I'm not sure if this has been brought up in the briefing before. I couldn't find it either sitting there. I think it's really akin to conspicuousness to complain that it's not conspicuous and it'd have to be raised at some point. In time, and it hasn't been raised at all. I also want to address that I think sometimes we can get lost in semantics, and we've talked about denial of boarding, we've talked about overbooking, and we talked about bumping. I think first class in this case may have been overbooked, but was there a denial of boarding? Was there bumping? No. There is no bumping in this case.
But
we think the regulations of 250 came in and regulated this area of bumping and downgrading. And what they've done is they've said there's this scheme of compensation set up. And if these factors occur, if you qualify for this denied boarding compensation, you're entitled to it. You're entitled to it within 24 hours or directly, or as the regulations talk about. Or they say you can deny that, you can refuse it, and then come around and sue us. I think if they hadn't said that, if they hadn't said you could come and sue us, I think that regulation would have preempted it because it came up with its own compensation scheme. But it's, what it did is it said, in this situation, you can still sue. But that's not our situation because the regulation also touched upon what happens in first class. And we have a situation here where the plaintiff is arguing in their briefing that it's good public policy of the state to try and discourage Delta Airlines from overbooking first class by making them pay for all this. And that's... Well, I think what that proposed rulemaking said was that technically you would constitute you would fall within the class of being bumped, but in that situation where you are just simply downgraded, that type of person is not really damaged as the other people are. And I think that proposed rulemaking was also carving out an exception for saying that technically, as a matter of semantics, you are bumped, but you're not in that same position, and so the different rule is going to apply.
I'm the representative of the audience.
Well, first of all, that case was cited for the first time up here at the podium. Right? It wasn't cited in their briefing. It's pre-ADA. It's pre-ADA. Your Honor, I don't know. I've kind of been hit from the side on that because it wasn't briefed and we hadn't had an opportunity to brief it. Thank you.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.